Hello, and welcome to the CineStories podcast. My name is Brian Dick, the executive director of the CineStory Foundation. I'm excited to have Patrick Tobin as our initial guest for the CineStories podcast. Patrick was our 2013 fellowship winner, and his winning script Cake has been produced and is going to be released later this month. It stars Jennifer Aniston, and it was also directed by Daniel Barnes, who won the CineStories Fellowship back in 1996 with his script, Phoebe in Wonderland. But before we get into my conversation with Patrick, I just want to remind everybody that we're now accepting submissions for our 2015 CineStory Retreat, and the early deadline is December 15th, so get those scripts in. If you'd like to know a little bit more about our organization, please visit us at www.cinestory.org. We're also on Facebook, as well as Twitter, at CineStory. And now, our conversation with Patrick.
We'll try it out.
We're both new to this.
We are. I think a good leaping off point might be how you started writing scripts. I mean, because your background, you did short stories and did some nonfiction pieces.
Right. So I went to USC Film School. I got out in 90, and in 95 I had a movie made that I wrote. And it was
No Easy Way.
No Easy Way, yeah. And it was a little indie drama with no stars in it and didn't get distribution. So after that, I did some treatments and did a few little odd writing jobs here and there. And then around 98, just decided that it wasn't going to happen. Like, I kind of felt like it wasn't going to happen. So I gave up screenwriting completely and just started writing, you know, short stories and essays. And Cake was originally a short story I wrote that was published in 2008. Dave Eggers has an anthology. And it was in that. And from that, I actually was inspired to adapt it. So it was kind of a weird, you know, circular journey that came back to the same point.
So you never, even during that time, you never had ideas or were struck with ideas of thinking, oh, this would be, make a great script.
No, I definitely did. But you know, at a certain point, whatever contacts I had in the industry, I didn't have. And, you know, I mean, screenwriting is having access to Hollywood. And so I was, you know, I just felt like, oh, if I approach it through short stories and nonfiction, you know, I'm writing, which is great. I love writing. And maybe that will bring me back around at some point. I never strategized with Cake. I wasn't like that. I'll write this and then adapt that story. But it just worked out.
And where did the idea for the short story come from? Did you have the character of Claire in your head? Or was it more of the themes of the movie thinking, oh, I want to delve into something that is about tragedy, loss, and coming back from that?
So I was in 2002, I was living in Stockholm in Sweden, and my friend there ran a support group for women with chronic pain. And he would tell me these amazing, just really inspiring stories of these women. And one day he was talking about them, and I thought, what if there was a woman in this group who was really just antagonistic and horrible to the other people? And what if she gets kicked out for her bad attitude? And so it did start with that character. Like, I was so intrigued by this person in, you know, cause I've been in a couple of support groups, and it's always, I find, you know, there's nobody really ruffles feathers too much. You know, everybody's kind of earnest and supportive. And, anyway, so that's how it started. And then I just sat down and wrote the support group scene for the short story. And that literally is not changed. I mean, that was the first scene in the story. It's the first scene in the movie. Pretty much hasn't changed at all.
Wow. That's pretty impressive with everything that, you know, the development process that takes place in Hollywood.
It was so funny because when I decided to adapt it, I thought, oh, this will be really easy because I've already written the story. And I sat down and I cranked out this support group scene. And I was like, oh, this is going great. And then there was nothing. Like, I had the short story was almost all third act material. So there was this, you know, as I call it, this yawning chasm of no story, no plot. Right. And that was hard because then I had to think, well, what, you know, I have this sort of funny launching scene into the movie. Now what happens next? And so that was really just the process of developing what was initially plot, weighted. And then what I found was more helpful is to be more character motivated. And so each scene was like, okay, what is Claire going to do now? What is her motive? And so I think that was really helpful for like this kind of project. I didn't have an outline. I didn't, you know, do the usual homework.
Now, well, so when you were figuring out what you were going to do with the rest of the, you know, 80 pages of right. your script after having that one scene, how did you discover your other characters like Nina and Roy?
So in the short story, Nina is a character. She does have, you know, a couple of visions with Nina. And Silvana, the housekeeper, is also a character, very minor character. And the girl at the end, the teenage girl who's played by Britt Robertson in the movie, she actually is a substantial part of the story, the end of the short story. So I had those characters and sort of generally what was happening with them.
Right.
But then, so then I introduced them. And then at some point I thought, okay, the first scene implies that there's something with this dead woman. What if Claire, the main character, wants to go learn more about this woman? And that became kind of almost a procedural detective story. She really wants her ultimate goal, I feel, is like, how did Nina kill herself? How did she succeed? And I think I want to do it, but I'm not sure how.
Right.
And
do you think, and maybe we might be getting into spoiler territory, so you feel free to refute, you know, to answer the yeah. question, but do you think it was that Claire almost saw her act as courageous and she is unwilling to do it, so she almost wants to see how a woman could do it
exactly
to you know, so she could do it herself?
Yeah, no, I think she's very impressed with Nina, because I think, you know, initially in the first scene, she's very, you know, she's getting annoyed by all these people expressing their grief over her suicide, which I don't think is a spoiler. I think that
right.
you know, when you talk about Anna Kendrick now, I think they're always saying the dead woman or the ghost. So, but then I think as she's going through her own journey, I think, you know, she becomes obsessed with this character, this Nina, and how did she do it? Like, I'm way to, you know, good job. Like, how did you do it?
Right.
And, so then that's how Nina's husband, her surviving husband, became a big part of the movie. And, you know, that's Sam Worthington's character. And that was really fun. Like, I just didn't know what was going to happen. Like, the first time she goes to the house, I had no idea what would happen. And, so that was fun writing it.
So when you had that sort of, you finally, you know, you struck gold when, in discovering the Roy character, and you sort of have your first draft done. What did you do then? Did you go back and rewrite it a few times and then get it to people, you know, hand it off to get notes back? Did you feel like, oh, here, I've got gold,
right.
you know?
No, I was happy and relieved when I finally finished it. And then I did give it to a couple of friends. And one of my friends who had read the short story and really loved it, gave me some really, she wasn't enthused with the script because she felt like I had sort of missed translating the voice in the short story into the character. And I think she was right. And I mean, I went back and really all those subsequent rewrites and drafts were really almost like shadowing Claire's character. And because the danger is, you know, she's a very abrasive personality. And I think, you know, there's a fine line between watching and sort of understanding someone who's like that and then just being like, I turned off completely. And I think that was a real challenge. And all the drafts were addressing that issue pretty much.
And I also feel like with characters like that, casting is so important.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, with somebody, you know, getting Jennifer Aniston cast in the role that,
yeah.
You're automatically, there's a likability to her. So you kind of give her, you give her some leeway,
yeah.
to, you know, to be an ass.
No, I think, you know, I mean, I was so, just incredibly amazed when she agreed to do it. And she really was the perfect person for it because, in that same way that, you know, I think when Mary Tyler Moore did Ordinary People, you know, she had been Mary Tyler Moore, you know, and everybody loved her from the TV show. And then I think when they saw her in the movie, it was just a very shocking and really intriguing performance. And I think, you know, Jen is the same way. I think she, you know, people have this expectation or knowledge of her work, but it's, I think, mostly from comedy pieces. I mean, she was great in The Good Girl. I thought she was amazing. And I thought she was great in Friends with Money. So I was, you know, when Daniel was talking to her, I just was crossing my fingers. I thought she would be perfect. She could absolutely nail this and also bring a little bit of humor to it. You know, I mean, she is just such a gifted comedian, and there are funny lines in the script. So, I mean, it's fun to watch an audience laughing, but also they're crying by the end, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, there is a lot of black humor, you know, sprinkled throughout. I mean, I also don't think you could stay with a character for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and there isn't those moments of levity.
Yeah.
You know, you need to break some of that tension at some point.
Right. Yeah.
So getting a little back to the progression of Cake. Mm-hmm. So you got it to some friends, they gave you notes, you took those notes to heart, rewrote. And then at what point, like what year was this, like 2012, when you felt like had a script that you could take and show to people?
So 2012, I felt like I was getting there. You know, I felt like the script was coming together. And, you know, like I said earlier, at that point really didn't have any contacts in Hollywood. So I thought, well, contests, I think, are the way to go. And I made the rookie error of, you know, signing up for Without a Box. And I entered literally every contest. I mean, and some of them were like P.O. Box in El Paso, Texas, you know, and they're all expensive. They're, you know, at least $40 and sometimes even more. And I did that for about a year. And what I noticed is I started becoming like a semifinalist or a finalist in some pretty good contests. I was a semifinalist for Zoetrope. And that was when I was like, okay. And the whole time I was still tinkering with the script. You know, I still was changing things. And so I think it was also getting better and better. And then I just, I entered CineStory.
And how did you find out about CineStory?
Through Without a Box. And they...
So Without a Box isn't all bad.
No. I would just say anybody who's entering contests, you know, really, if there's no prize and it just seems kind of shady or whatever, then don't waste your money. But CineStory, I read the description in Without a Box, and I went to the website, and then I was obviously really impressed. You know, I thought, well, this is a great contest. It's like money, you get access to mentors, you get the 4 days up in Idlewild.
So, right.
So I was, you know, I entered that. And then I also entered a contest at Nantucket Film Festival, which is the Showtime screenwriting competition. And I won both of them about the same time, which was summer of last year.
And that's, yes. And then I came on as executive director after had won.
Yeah. Cleo called me to talk to me and then also to let me know that I won.
And she was moving to Australia.
Nice getting to know you. I'll see you later. Good luck. And it was funny because Clea actually, she called me. I was in the Boston airport getting ready to board a flight to Nantucket to accept my win there. And she called and said, you got it. So I'm in the airport, you know, kind of yelling and people, I don't know if they thought I was a Red Sox fan or something. Nuts.
And so at that point, you had, because Daniel Barnes was a judge that year, he had read the script, become a huge fan, and then he started talking to you about how you guys could start collaborating on the project.
Right. So Daniel and his husband Ben, who was the producer on Cake, I met with them when I came back from Nantucket, and they were both really sweet. And initially it was like, well, so what's happening with the script? And I was like, I think meaning is anybody else considering it? And I basically had to tell them, you know, nothing's happening. But I got incredibly lucky because I met Daniel and Ben afterwards, and they're just, They're great people. I love both of them. And they're also really talented and very supportive. They optioned it. We did a rewrite. And that was a really good and very positive experience. And then the script started going out just to people. And I should say, so Daniel was at WME, or is at WME. And so his agent signed me shortly after that. So it's kind of once the process started, everything kind of happened really, really quickly.
Now, when you sat down with Daniel, who's a writer director, how did that process work? Did you feel it was very collaborative and?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, this is maybe jumping ahead, but I mean, Daniel is with everybody, you know, the actors, the crew, me as the writer, you know, an incredibly generous and collaborative person. He's not one of these, like, do it this way. It was always, and just because he's a writer, I found, you know, his notes and Ben's initially were really spot on and really helped improve the project. So we did the rewrite, and then that's the script that started going out to people at WME, where there was a lot of support for the project, and just kind of went from there.
Now, was Jennifer Aniston, is she with WME or?
She's with CAA. Okay. The script eventually went to CAA, and they were very supportive of the project as well. And so it went to Jen, and she read it and was just, you know, was on board, and it was, you know.
Now, when you got signed with WME, at what point of the year, was this still in 2013?
This was, yes. So it was last fall, and it was like September. And then part of my prize for Nantucket was I got a month to go back and stay at a house in Nantucket and write, which was great.
Yeah.
So I went and did that. And then when I came back, during the interim, my agent said, and Daniel started sending out the script to people, and it got a lot of positive response, and I did a lot of meetings, and then, you know, almost, well, it's December last year, then The Blacklist came out, and that was, you know, shocking, but, you know, really cool.
So this is a part I kind of want to focus on a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because, as you said earlier, that you were a guy who had lost all his contacts in the industry.
Right.
And in 6 months, all of a sudden you have WME behind a script.
Right.
You're going out to A-list talent, you know, you're showing up on The Blacklist, and, you know, I feel like a lot of that could be overwhelming. You know, if there are any ideas of how you handled it, like the way you approached it and were able to handle all of that, because it just seems overwhelming for it to happen that quickly.
Yeah, it was like a roller coaster, you know, it was fun, but it was, you know, it was very, very overwhelming. And, you know, suddenly you're getting a lot of attention, and which is great. That's what you need. You need that attention. But, so I, you know, what I would do, I mean, I live in Long Beach, so we don't live in Hollywood. We don't live in LA. I would come home and we just had our life. And, you know, my husband is not in the business at all, has no interest in, I mean, he likes movies, but he's not into, you know, a Hollywood scene. So I, you know, we just had our life, and that was very normal. And then, you know, some days I go to meetings, and, you know, it'd be on some studio lot, and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm here at, you know, Fox. This is great. But also I think just my age, you know, I'm not a young person, you know, I'm in my late 40s, and it's like, I think that has added to the ability to handle this with not, I think if I were much younger, I would probably not be able to handle it just personally.
Right.
without it kind of overwhelming me, or, you know, feeling like, I never felt like entitled, or, you know, I'm always very grateful for what's happening, because I've had a lot of time where there's been no attention, and
right.
And, you know, and those years, definitely those years, those 20 years were like, I had to find the motivation to keep writing, because there wasn't access to Hollywood, and really short stories, you know, you can't make a living off of those. And it's just as competitive there, because there's a ton of really great writers. So, you know, I just had to do it myself. You know, my husband and my family were supportive, but also if I had just said, you know, I don't want to write, anymore. I'm going to do something else. They would have been like, well, that's good, you know.
And that, once you signed with WME, though, didn't you take your stack of short stories and go, hey, what can we do with these?
Well, Ben and, you know, actually Ben and Daniel and I are working on one of my short stories, and I am woefully behind on a rewrite, but that's going very well, and that's been fun, you know, to do that. Some of the stories, there's a, you know, lend themselves maybe more to a TV format, and there's, I would say, the majority just, there's nothing there, you know, to adapt. They're such a small slice, and it's not really something that I could see expanding.
Right. Now, your husband, Joe, what's your schedule like, writing-wise? Do you write in the mornings, or do you write in the evenings? Is it sort of time when he's not in the house?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I'm not working full time anymore, so I'm able to write when I'm at home. But I also, I'm one of those people, I can't just stick to a schedule. I mean, I'm not one of those, I wait for the muse, but I'm also not like, okay, I get up at 5, write for 2 hours, and then I'm done. For sometimes, like some days I won't write, and then there'll be days where I can write, you know, 20 pages. And so I just, when I sort of feel that coming on, and I can tell now, cause I've done it enough now, when I'm in that mode.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, I'll just tell Joe if it's night, and, you know, I'll just say he'll just go watch a movie, and I'll write.
Now, are you still following the same path that you did with Cake, which is, don't do an outline, just let, you know, whichever way the wind is blowing.
Well, so the woefully late rewrite, the project's more of a sci-fi piece. So I didn't do an outline, and now I'm having to outline because it just got a little too crazy.
Right.
But I think, it just depends on the project. I think something that's the plot so important, like a sci-fi piece, that I think you definitely need to outline, but like a more of a character thing, I think I just sort of knew where I wanted to end up, and that mm-hmm. was like, you know, inhabiting that character and then just going for it. And that, it's really fun if you do nail your character. It's amazing how much of the plot will come from that. Mm-hmm. Like if you just really, you know, settle into that character and then have a scene, and the next scene sort of almost comes out of that, you know, in a more organic way, rather than if you have a beat by beat outline. And I don't know, does that make any sense?
I mean, I think it's, I always look at outlines as a guide, and if you're in the moment and it's taking you somewhere else, you should explore that and right. not be so beholden to an outline.
Right. Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's me. I mean, everyone has their own process.
Right. Yeah.
And then you get back from Nantucket, the CineStory retreat mm-hmm. was at the end of September in right. 2013.
Right.
And, what was your experience like up there, you had 3 mentors?
Yes. The mentors I had were fantastic. All 3 of them.
And you know, especially if you're, you know, the last time you were sort of in that path was in the mid-90s, you know, that was sort of before they became manager producers.
Right. Yeah. And so I got some very good advice from people with CineStory, and, you know, I've kept in touch with quite a few people, people that were there and also mentors.
Once you had gone out and went out to cast and Jennifer came on board, how did the script change, if at all?
So, long pause. So what happened is, so Jen came on. They made a big announcement at Berlin, and then they sort of went into, well, initially they were going to be filming in October, and then that got bumped up to April. So pretty soon after the announcement, then, there were notes from Jen and her people, and they were really great, notes. There were not like huge changes, but there were,
does she have to be so unlikable? Yeah. Can we make her more likable?
No. And I think, you know, and that was great because, you know, Daniel had a couple of meetings and conversations with her, and just, he would tell me, he's like, you know, she's so committed. She's doing so much work for this. She's really coming ready to nail this character. And her notes were these very character-specific questions, which when I looked at them, I was like, oh, okay. There's a really good example. I don't think she would mind me sharing it, but there was a moment where the Sam Worthington character and Jen go to the cemetery, and he's hanging chimes up above Anna Kendrick's gravestone or gravesite. And they're sort of talking, and Jen is looking at the date, and she says, "Oh, she's much older than I thought she was." And the previous scene, she's been, you know, the ghost of Anna has appeared to her and has tried to drown her in the pool. And Jen came back and she goes, "I think my character would somehow still be dealing with that, because that just happened maybe a few hours before. Like, she still would be unsettled and would be, whatever she'd be saying would be addressing, sort of hinting that she had had this horrible encounter." And it was true. Like, I hadn't missed that. You know, I had never made that connection as a writer, which I should have, you know, because your characters are always bringing their past and whatever happens with them to the next scene. And I think that was a great, like, oh my God, thank you for catching that. But also, I think it made the scene much richer and better.
And so you guys moved into production in the spring of this year.
Yeah, we went into production beginning of April.
And were you on set every day? Did Daniel have you there to, you know, if there are questions came up with the script, to have you there for support?
I was always able to go to any shoot I wanted to, and I was still working part time. So I was trying to juggle that and also the shoots. Luckily, there's a lot of night shoots. So
what were you doing part time?
I was still doing my marketing job. So I was wrapping that up because I had, you know, I was able to leave that finally. But I went to maybe two or three shoots a week, and then I was just available if, you know, Daniel had a question. He would call me and say, you know, can you think of a different line for this? Or can you, I mean, that didn't happen very often, but, it was very, very smooth, very, mellow set. And I think everybody was really, you know, supportive, and there was no like agendas, and nobody was being a diva or.
I can only imagine though, what you were feeling when, you know, a year prior, you know, you were still working full-time marketing.
Right, in Anaheim.
Yeah, and you hadn't gotten word about Nantucket or CineStory.
Right.
You know, and then that first day that you were able to walk on set to that euphoric feeling.
Yeah, it was so surreal and exciting. I mean, it was a cemetery scene with Sam and Jen. So that was the first time, and just walking up and seeing all the trucks and the crew and, you know, and the trailers. And
were you dancing through the cemetery? It's like, can you believe this?
Can
this
you believe great? This I was, and then, you know, just, and then meeting Jen, cause I met her on the set and I met Sam, and it was just, you know, it was like, I kept texting Joe, my husband, who was at work. And I'm like, you're not going to believe this. I just met Sam Worthington. I just, you know, we're having lunch, you know? And it's free, you know.
Now, does Sam keep his accent for
He rolling? Does, yeah, he does. He did his natural accent.
And did you have to change anything, you know, just small tweaks with the script for
There was like one minor tweak. They're out having drinks at a bar, and we didn't even tweak it. We added something that acknowledged he was Australian, which was pretty funny. And that made sense. You know, that's the only time we acknowledge it, because it's set in LA and you just accept, I think, that people, there are so many people from other countries.
Right. And so you get through the shoot, moves into post-production. When was the first time you were able to see a cut?
So what happened is they were originally going to do editing for a lot longer. Like, I think they had a 3-month schedule. And I think the thinking was that they would start going for festivals like Sundance or, you know, maybe even Cannes. I'm not sure. I pronounce it every different way. Like, and so they were putting together, you know, the first assembly, and then they were, you know, tweaking that and refining that. And then at some point, I think they were just the producers and Daniel thought, I think we've got it. I think we've got the movie. I don't think we need to do extensive reshoots or any, actually. So what they did is they decided to, what do we need to do to get into Toronto? Like, that would probably be the best festival for this project. So they cut post in half. Like, they really sped up the process. And so I finally was able to see it. I saw the cut that they sent to Toronto, and there were some minor changes after that, but that was the first time. So that was, like, I think in June.
And then you went up to Toronto for the premiere.
Yes.
And talk about, I'm sure, you know, before it was overwhelming, this must have been overwhelming on speed.
It was
your first festival and having a film starring Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, I mean, the attention she gets, just that level of star, is insane. I don't know how she does it every day. I mean, there were just huge crowds, you know, standing around waiting for her. And then you've got all the paparazzi, and you've got, you know, people wanting to interview, you know, everybody involved with the film. And there, you know, there's this, as you walk into the theaters, there's this long line of reporters from all over the world. So they've got different accents, you know, like from Ireland or, you know, South America. And I just went into autopilot. Like, it was too much stimulation. You know, I feel like a kid, like if you have a little kid and you overstimulate them and they just kind of like zone out at a certain point. That was what I did. But when we got in the theater, my mom and my brother and his kids and Joe were there, and the lights went down and the movie started. And I just was like, for 5 minutes, I didn't breathe. I think I just was holding my breath, and then I just relaxed and enjoyed the movie. And then afterwards, you know, they gave Jen a standing ovation, which was great.
And the cut that you saw previously, did that have final score? Was it a finished?
No, it had temp music.
Okay, so this time when you saw it in
the
Toronto,
the full score with, you know, which is just beautiful, beautiful, really terrific score, and it had been color corrected. I mean, and Daniel had said this, like, between what I saw and what the final film, it doesn't sound like a lot's been done, but it is a lot. It makes a huge difference to how you respond to it.
And so, and now here we are in December of 2014, about to be in December 14, 2014. I'll edit this too. So here we are, November 2014, Cake about to be released at the end of December.
Right.
And then it's going to go, and that's a limited release, and then it's going to go wide in January.
In January, right.
And so right now it seems like there's a big push for all the award seasons.
Yes, they are. They're really pushing Jen, as they should. I think she gives, you know, an amazing, brilliant performance.
But that all starts with the script.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, as a screenwriter, yes, I agree.
this is a screenwriting podcast.
Oh, okay. So we can talk frankly. No, yeah. No, but I mean, it does, you know, it does start with a script, but then at each stage it becomes more people's project, you know, like, and that's that this is something I'm going to jump back really quickly, but Daniel, like 4 weeks before production started, had a weekend at his house where all the department heads and I was there and the producers, and you just talked about the script, the movie, your, you know, things you vision, your dream for it. And people would bring in clips and, you know, photos of this is, I'm thinking of this as sort of a color palette. And it's amazing from that weekend how much was discussed that I see in the film, just the look and the feeling of it. And so that, I think, you know, yeah, this, it starts with the script, but then it's so cool as each step of the way, more people are coming in and it's becoming this group effort. And, you know, because the movie, I mean, I wrote it, but there's no way I could have, you know, produced the movie, you know.
Right. Now here you are waiting for this release. And you've moved on to where you're writing full time.
Right.
Is there anything looking back, there was a one piece of advice or two pieces of advice or anything that you really hold on to?
Here's the one thing I wish I could go back to in time and tell Patrick Tobin is just keep a list of short stories, articles, like keep a file of material that you respond to as a writer, as a screenwriter, because what I found, you know, I've been going up for a lot of assignment work and it's very competitive and, you know, it's a lot of work and, you know, I'm enjoying that. But I think if you can control the material or the idea earlier in the process, I think you're in a better position. I mean, I don't, you know, most writers don't have a ton of money to be optioning things, but it's surprising how little you actually have to pay to option some of this stuff. And I wish I had kept a more thorough inventory of that, because a lot of times I've been in meetings, and especially earlier when I first started doing it, people that like, what are some things that you like? What have you read that you, you know, cause it, when they find out the Cake was adapted from a short story, I think they're like, oh, well, do you have anything else? Or do you know any other stories? And I just kind of blanked, you know, I mean, there were some obvious big books I liked that were already in development or optioned, but, you know, now, so I just go through literary journals. I read a lot of them. I read every, you know, newspaper, magazine, and just, you know, looking for stuff that I respond to that I think would make a good movie. So I would say, is your writing, whatever you're writing, just be put somewhere having a list of ideas or.
And how have you found dealing with the business side of writing? I mean, did your marketing experience sort of help handle that, or do you? Was that something new that you had to learn once
it was
the agents and managers started coming? And...
Right. Yeah, I definitely didn't know anything about it. So that was pretty much, I had to get a complete education very quickly. And I have a great team of people. So that was lucky in that sense that I didn't.
And how did you educate yourself? Was it relying on those people to
asking their questions? And they were, you know, actually very good about explaining everything. Like, you know, this is what this is about. This is what you're signing. You know, this is what this document or agreement is. Because if you don't have a background in it, it can be a little overwhelming. What am I signing? You
know? Right. Oh no. Yeah. It's all lawyer speak.
Yeah. you're like, I think this is a release, but I'm not sure. So that was definitely, I needed an education. And then also just, I'm really interested in TV and I did not have any knowledge of that side of the entertainment business. And luckily, WME, there's some people there in the TV department that have been really helpful in just educating me on how that process works and what you need to do. And so I'm trying to develop a couple of TV ideas.
Great. And so that's your hope for the future, is to possibly move into TV, or
I think in this day and age, I think everybody needs to be able to write anything, you know. I mean, I think the days where you could sort of specialize in one thing are kind of ending. And I think even just writing, you know, I feel fortunate that I write fiction and nonfiction, you know, I write prose and the only thing I don't do are plays, but I feel like maybe I should throw my hat in that. But especially with like screenwriting, films and TV, I think writers should, I mean, any more, you should be able to do both, I think.
Right.
And you see a lot of people, a lot of great filmmakers that are doing TV and vice versa, you know, TV people that are doing films. And
so is the next thing that hopefully is on the horizon is this sci-fi script with the Barneses.
Yeah.
Cause at one point didn't you have a period, did you have a period piece script?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, and Phil actually was the one who critiqued it. Yeah. I had adapted, a Charlotte Bronte novel that nobody reads. It's called Villette. And
wait, nobody reads the script or the novel?
Both. It's, yeah, there's not a, well, and it's funny. So Jane Eyre had come out, right, I think last year or the year before. And, so I think you like each year only gets one female lead period movie. When I was describing it to people, they kind of glaze over like, oh, that's great. What a nice exercise. But I thought it turned out well, and I'll definitely hang on to it, and maybe someday I'll meet somebody who's like, I want to do a Charlotte Bronte book.
Well, have you been able to use that as a sample for your work, or has Cake basically been...
Cake has been the big sample, yeah.
Because not only that, they don't have to read it. They can actually go to a movie theater screen. Well, cool. Patrick, I'm so happy that we were able to do this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Best of luck with you and Cake. And,
well, thank you.
Hopefully we'll be talking about another project down the road.
I hope so too.
All right, great.
All right, thanks, Brian.
Thanks.